This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
If I can feel like my art is being of service, that I feel aligned, that feeling of alignment to me is something I crave, and I look for any opportunity to help me get there.
Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of the Blurred Girl Podcast. I'm Kara Mahorn, aka The Blurred Girl. This week's interview is with actor and activist Wilson Cruz. Wilson is an American actor known for playing Ricky Vasquez on My So-Called Life, Angel in the Broadway tour production of Rent, and the recurring characters Junito on Noah's Ark and Dr. Hugh Culver on Star Trek Discovery. As an openly gay man of Afro-Puerto Rican ancestry, he has served as an advocate for gay youth, especially gay youth of color. I'm a huge fan of his ability to balance his acting life and his activism. This interview with Wilson Cruz is actually from November of 2020. It was three episodes into season three of Star Trek Discovery and the first week of shooting of season four. Now here we are in October of 2021, and I have a special announcement I want to make. It is a Star Trek Discovery connection, but first, let's pay some bills.
There's something weird going on with influencers right now. I'm a little freaked out. They just get everything they want. Everything's a little too perfect. Their smiles are a little too straight. They're using filters I can't find anywhere. I know what I'm about to say might sound a little unhinged, but I think it might be witchcraft. At least, that's what Jenna Clayton thought right before she went missing. We're excited to introduce a new show from Realm, If I Go Missing, The Witches Did It, starring Oscar-nominated actress Gabourey Sidibe. When a Black writer goes missing, a white podcast host with a savior complex takes up the cause of finding her and collides with a coven of influencers she suspects are responsible. This show is a little bit of The Craft meets Mean Girls meets Get Out. Learn more about If I Go Missing, The Witches Did It at realm.fm. And be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
So before I forget, please subscribe to the Blurred Girl Podcast on your favorite podcatcher. Also, leave a comment over on iTunes and a like. And if you really want to show me how much you love this episode, please screenshot this episode, throw it up on Instagram stories, and tag me. I always answer those. Now, my bit of news is that this weekend at New York Comic Con, I am actually going to be making my first public appearance since the pandemic, moderating the Star Trek Discovery panel at the Javits Center at New York Comic Con. I'm super, super excited about it. So that's the Star Trek Discovery panel this Saturday, October 9th, from 12:45 p.m. Eastern to 1:45 p.m. Eastern on the Empire stage. And if you can't make the show, please go to Find the Metaverse, F-I-N-D-T-H-E, Metaverse, M-E-T-A-V-E-R-S-E.com, and you can watch the live stream. Now, the reason why I wanted to post this interview was because it hasn't been seen since Wilson Cruz visited me on the Blurred Girl Live over on Twitch. And also, he talks a lot about season three and gives us a little bit of hints about season four, which is exactly what we're going to be talking about at New York Comic Con. So up next, my interview with actor and activist Wilson Cruz. Wilson doesn't know this, but I have been a fan of his since My So-Called Life. I'm 82 years old, and I'm also a fan of his.
82, you're knowing you.
When he was, yes, honey, Angel on Broadway and on. When he was in Rent, which was also amazing. But he's done so much. But the main thing I wanted to talk to you about tonight, and I'm so excited to talk to you about, is how you balance your life as an actor with also your activism as being such an outspoken member in the LGBTQ plus community. But first, I gotta ask how you are right now. Like this moment in 2020.
I am relieved. Disappointed.
Yes.
And ready for the fight ahead. I feel like because of the way the election ended up turning out, we have been laid bare to the work ahead, right? And so now it's about doing the work and committing to it, and not leaving anyone behind.
Yeah, I mean, is it me?
By the way, the other doctor on Star Trek Discovery is the gorgeous and very talented Raven Duada. She's so lovely, and I love her so much. And you're going to be seeing a lot more of her this season, so I want to make sure that people know that.
Anyway, oh, and we're going to be talking about her too, because she brought you back, your character technically. She brought you back, and I want to discuss that lovely episode. That I'm like, wait, there is brown people in the sick bay running things.
Yes.
I like this.
Yes.
Getting back to just the election really quick, are you as nervous as I am every time Kamala gets out of the plane and goes to her caravan? Like, I want that to be covered and bulletproof. I need the images. I don't need the photo op. I need her safe.
Right. I'm always like, why is that car so far?
Right.
And why aren't they going into a hangar, where she goes in directly through to security or something? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
We're going to have a very nervous 4 years, just like we had a very nervous 8 years. You know, and what I'm really happy about is that our Michelle, spoke today, I believe it was today, about the danger that person put her family in direct danger because of delusion.
Yeah.
That Barack Obama was born anywhere else but the United States. The security that they had to go and get, the death threats that they had to endure because of this person's willingness to allow his racism to try and denigrate the first African-American president of this country, and then continue to do it for years. And is why we found ourselves enduring 4 years of him. And I'll be damned if we're gonna endure one more day than we have to.
No, absolutely.
I want him dragged out ass first, to be honest with you.
I actually don't want to see that ass. I really don't. but I do want him dragged. And also the other thing, the whole country needs healing. And the whole country has been in trauma.
For sure. But I'll say this. If you watched this past week's episode of Star Trek Discovery, we not only have to admit that we have gone through a traumatic event, 4 years, almost 5 years of a traumatic event, communal traumatic event, but we also have to sit down and tell the truth about what just happened. You know,
we absolutely do.
You can't get all of this talk about, unity, which I believe is incredibly important, but unity based on truth. The fact is that 70 million people voted for a racist, xenophobic, homophobic, transphobic, inept, ignorant man. And I'm not going to be able to get to the point where there is forgiveness until we air that out.
Yeah.
Because if we don't, it will return. It will rear its head. Just look at the Philippines. Look anywhere around the world where authoritarianism creeps right back in when you're not vigilant.
Yeah, absolutely.
What he's doing right now is creating the atmosphere that will allow him to carry this on after he's dragged out ass first.
Yeah, and that's the part that we have to pay. No, that's real. And that's actually what we're all dealing with. I had said over the weekend, I had that little gif, you know, with Jay-Z bopping to the music, but looking in the air, like kind of nervously. That was me most of the weekend. I was like, I'm happy, but.
Yes, right.
And
you know, I'm not just talking about white people here, right? Like the fact of the matter is.
Look, today alone.
We saw a lot of people, Latinos, who are delusional themselves, who think they're white, voting for this man. We need to deal with that too.
Yeah. But the funny thing is, that is actually a perfect segue to what I was going to talk about this past episode of Star Trek Discovery, because one of the things that I loved about this episode, it was, oh my God, emotional. Because we had the crew, who are now almost 1,000 years in the future, who are mentally kind of coming apart at the seams.
Yeah.
And your character, the doctor, who is uniquely equipped to deal with the situation, I feel, on two levels. One, you died and came back and had to acclimate yourself to what is happening, what has happened. Where was I? Where am I now? Your character. And then also, and I love it, Hugh has this look that I feel like he reserves for Stamets that's always like, I'm okay, just finish your yelling. What's happening? But that look was on his face the entire episode, because everybody's like, I'm fine. And you're like, you're absolutely not, but okay.
You're not.
But all right.
All right, but I love you.
Yes.
This was a long, you know, this past episode was kind of the culmination of a very long 3-season arc that, you know, over the course of 3 seasons, where this man who was really living his life as someone's partner, you know, moved his entire life to this ship and kind of built a life around this genius man, and then was killed. And in this in-between world where he existed for a while, he realizes that if he'd ever been given the opportunity to go back and have a second chance at life, that he was going to prioritize himself much more than he had and be a more equal partner. And come to find out, he does get that opportunity. And then in the interregnum, where between the time he came back and when he reconciles with Stamets, he has to decide what this new life is going to be. And realizes there's a term called post-traumatic growth, which we talk about in the show, and I brought to the writers and said, look, this is this thing that's really interesting to me, because we hear so much about post-traumatic syndrome. And we never hear about, we hear about the tragic consequences of it. But there's also opportunity there. And for Hugh, it was an opportunity to make some really positive changes to his life and some choices, about being more of service. And he gets that opportunity in this episode, because he is an expert in this field. He has brought himself back in a more focused and determined way. And in many ways, he's going to be an example of that. And you know, his being on this ship was a choice, a very last minute choice, where he sees this as an opportunity to not only stay with his partner, who he realizes is incredibly important to him and he loves, but that this is an opportunity, a real opportunity at a clean slate. And that's what this new future is for all of them. They've left everything and everyone behind.
They have. And I do want to address that, but not before we address the fact that when they killed you, I screamed. And I was like, No, they did not just do a kill the gay on Star Trek. No, they did not just kill another brown person, because that was an issue I was having in the beginning. I'm like, okay, I get it. We got brown Klingons. We got albino Klingons. Okay, I got it. But then all of a sudden, all the brown people started just dropping. And I'm like, listen. But then I saw you did an after show with Anthony, and everybody was like, it's okay, it's okay. And I'm like, well, if Wilson says it's okay, I'm gonna believe him. But I was sipping tea for the rest of that season.
I totally hear you.
No, what was, when you got the script, what was your reaction? Did you say, excuse me, people?
Well, I was in no position to do that. You know what I mean? Like, just in reality. You know, I was a recurring guest star the first season. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I got hired per episode. And... Mm-hmm. I was under the impression that I was going to be in more, you know, that I was going to be in a few, more than a few. And when that script came, actually the phone call came first. When the phone call came, I was really shocked. I was shocked. I was disappointed, and because I had grown so accustomed, so fond of him. And the potential that I thought the character had. So I was kind of heartbroken. And, you know, there was a period of time where that's all I felt. And then I was very quickly relieved to find out that he would be coming back, and that this was a piece of a larger arc. And when that was explained to me, when it was appropriate for them to explain it to me, I felt and understood that we needed to explain this and be transparent with the audience because of this fact, because of this controversy around the burying of gays on television, an issue that I had worked on for many years when I worked at GLAAD. And so it was important for us to deal with it in the right way. So I made promises to people who know that I don't make promises unless I can keep them. And I told you 3 years ago that this was going to pay off. And should I do it? I told you so.
Yeah. I was really happy also that they didn't gloss over you coming back. Like, your character came back and it was very traumatic. Like you said, they actually explained it and it was traumatic, and your character did not get back with Stamets right away. And I was like, hey, look at that agency. That's how you write it.
Right. There was, you know, everyone, when we talked about how this was going to happen, everyone involved understood that there had to be a price. There was a cost to what happened to him. And I wanted us to see that and experience it, but I also wanted to see the growth in him. You know, I wanted him to come back stronger, and he did that. And now, you know, for me, he's fascinating, you know, to play. He's, you know, there's so much, it's so dense for me. You know, who he is for me is so, I want to say real, but it's more than that. I know him, you know, I'm excited to see what happens with him. It's one of the best jobs I've ever had.
If you look at Hugh season one, I'm not saying he was bright eyed, bushy tailed. I mean, he was with Stamets. No. You know what I mean? Like, right. He was realistic.
He was the loving partner.
Yeah. But now he's like, listen, this is what we're going to do. I'm really not interested whether you like it or not, but this is happening. And Stamets is sort of like, okay.
You're going to see that it's not just with Stamets anymore. That, you know, Hugh has mastered the concept of tough love.
But we saw it in this episode.
Right.
We saw it in this past episode when at that dinner table. Also, side note, I love Giorgio and Linus. I don't care what anybody says. Go ahead, honey. Get that lizard. Whatever you got to do. Everybody, look, they were given Oscars to Shape of Water. What? What?
So true. She, it's so true.
Let her live her life.
I didn't even make that connection. That's so funny.
But
good one.
At the table, you were very much like, this is happening. I told y'all it was going to happen, but it's happening now.
Yeah. And also, he needed it to happen. He knew that this was part of the healing process. This had to happen. And this is what I was talking about our country. We have to have that moment, because otherwise any reconciliation is not based on anything real. And so that happened on the ship. That's what that dinner was. It had to explode so that we can see what it was, what the mess was, and clean it up.
This is the weird part. We were having this problem even before the pandemic. And now we're having it more now because it's all social distance. But even before the pandemic, people did not know how to deal with conflict. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? I've had arguments with people and people are like, oh my God, I didn't think you spoke to them anymore. And I'm like, no, I didn't like that thing. And we worked that out, but I don't want them dead. I just don't like that thing. And we discussed it. But there's people that don't know how to deal with that.
But there's also, you know, the concept of setting limits is also incredibly healthy, right? Like, how many times are you going to have that conversation with someone until you realize I have to step away,
right,
for my health, you know? So I'm gonna engage with you. We're gonna go, but it has to be a back and forth. You know, it's not about bad guy or good guy. It's about, let's get to the truth of this, and not about ego. But there are some things that are not negotiable either. Like, I'm not gonna negotiate how human you think I am.
Listen, it's funny. I'm remembering, it's sort of like a barometer my mother used to give me as a child. Nobody in our house was allowed to have a nickname. Like, so people would call the house and say, can I talk to Kay or can I talk to, no, nobody lives here by that name. No, my mother's not from this country. She's from Bermuda. And she was like, okay. I gave you this name for a reason. That is your name. I didn't give you anybody else's name. And if they refuse to learn how to say your name, they're not interested in you. They're not interested in being your friend. And so it's so funny because I go back to that sometimes when I meet people. Oh, can I just call you something else? No. That's my name.
I have one friend who calls me Willie. Just one. And only because I like the way it sounds when it comes out of his mouth. That's it. Can I call
Nobody
you
else
Willie?
Gets it.
No. It's too close to Mr. Willie. You know, like, go get the car, Willie. I don't like it.
I don't like that.
Did I interrupt you? I'm sorry.
No. This is exactly what the show is. It's just a conversation. But
it does remind me of that story. And have you read Cast yet? Isabel Wickerson's Cast?
Yeah, you're the second person this week that has told me about this book. Okay.
You should read it. Everybody should read it. Every single person should read it. But there's a story in this book about this man who grew up during Jim Crow. And when he had his first child, he negotiated with his wife, but he insisted that his daughter be named Miss, so that every person who engaged with her had to call her
Miss.
I forget what her last name was, but Miss Walter. And one day she went to school in her own segregated school, and the principal asked her her name was. And she was like, Miss. She's like, no, I want what your name is, not Miss. And he like went and found her records, and she went home and told her father that story, and he couldn't have been happier to hear it.
Because this man is going to have to call her Miss. Wow. That's fantastic. I also want to talk about this amazing episode in terms of Gray and Adira and their... what we got to learn. First of all, I was a little confused because everybody kept calling Adira she, so I was like, okay, maybe they're not non-binary. But then it turned out that they didn't remember who they were because of the trauma of what had happened to them.
Right. We can't deal with all of it in one episode. It's just, there's too much. So it as I've been saying, even with Hugh, be patient. The story will reveal itself.
And you know what? When I think about
it, and much faster too.
Yes.
My situation.
Yeah, they got to theirs pretty quick, but yeah. It was also the callback. This is another time I yelled. The moment I realized that there was a symbiote involved, I'm like, oh my God, they're a Dax. He's a Dax. Oh my goodness. Because I was a Deep Space Nine fan. I'm a huge fan of Deep Space Nine. Yes. A lot of people are the Next Generation. I'm a Deep Space Nine fan because I love the fact that that was a space station, not a ship. Also, yeah. A black man in charge. Also, when Q showed up, he popped him in the mouth and there was no more problems with Q. He handled right. His business.
And also, we are a direct descendant of DS9 in the sense that they started this concept of Star Trek long form storytelling, right? So there were mm-hmm. episodes that led to other, you know, that were continuous. So, and also in its tone was also a bit darker, you know, a little more serious in tone than other Star Trek. So we owe a lot to DS9.
For that last episode, I know many times actors just get their sides. They don't see the rest of the episode. Sometimes you just see your lines. Did you see the whole script?
Oh yeah, you only get the sides if you're a guest star. If you're a series regular,
you get the whole thing.
Okay. You get the whole script. And actually, if you've been hired, you get the whole script. You must.
Okay. So, and then I'm assuming
you only get the sides if you haven't got the job yet because they're trying to keep it undercover. But yes, I did know the whole story. And I knew the whole story before. Because I used to work at GLAAD and I wanted to know the story.
Right. Well, that's what I was gonna ask. Like, did you sort of consult a little bit to make sure that there wasn't that they were using the right pronouns, well, that they did approach it properly.
I will say this, I didn't have to ask because the producers were like, hey, we want to make sure we're doing this right. So, and then they did, they've been open about this. We consulted with GLAAD, Nick Adams over there, who's their transmedia consultant, has been invaluable to us. So I didn't have anything to worry about once Nick was involved.
That's amazing. You'll be in your trailer.
There's very few people I trust more than Nick Adams. He's everything. He changed the face of television.
Doesn't it feel good though, being able to say that I trust this other person to be able to deal with the storyline, as opposed to, even though you did groundbreaking work, but My So-Called Life, when it was like the first time that we were actually seeing this and that fight at that time. What does it feel like?
Feel like now?
Yeah, looking back on that first role.
You know, I it's always amazing to me how young I was when I look back at it, right? Like,
yeah, because you were like eight. You were like only 8 or 10 years old, right? Because you're like 35 now.
Uh-huh. I was 19 then, and that was 25 years ago. So you do the math.
I just want your moisturizer. That's all.
Heels.
Oh, okay.
I'm always mesmerized when I think about it because there was nothing in that boy's story that really prepared him for what was about to happen to him. And thank God that I wasn't aware because it would have freaked me out. But I do love that I had enough instinct and was willing to follow them to know that role was going to be really important to people. And that I needed to get it right. And so because of that, because it meant something to me personally, because I knew what it would have meant to me to see it, I knew that I had to get it right. And that I needed to take ownership of it and talk about it publicly in a personal way, that it had the potential of helping move the needle. And that 19-year-old kid understood that is amazing to me. So what's it like now? You know, it's a whole different world. There's actual, in this moment, there's an actual desire to see the world as it is, as it actually is, as opposed to this whitewashed version that we had for decades. And to me, that's really exciting, because when you are using television and film and you are presenting the world as it is, there's so much more potential in reaching an audience and moving them and in storytelling. Because when people are allowed to see themselves on screen, mirrored back at them, there's something empowering that happens to a person when they get that. And I know this to be true because I didn't get that. And so I understand the opposite. I understand how debilitating it can feel to be invisible. And if there's one thing I've wanted to do with my career for the last 25 years is to make a dent in that. And I think Star Trek Discovery is probably the best example of that outside of Pose that we've ever had.
Yes, and Pose is fabulous as well. Also, and I say this every time I see Sonequa, it's the future. Mm.
Yeah.
And the fact, like, being that, like, Uhura was one of my, yes. And being that Uhura was one of my heroes as a child, and now I'm grown and I'm still just as geeked out seeing Sonequa. And I'm like, and we're here, we are in the future, because it means something, even if you're projecting it through art, to actually put yourself in your own story in the future. And that there's more, there's a lot of us, you know? But
we're in the future and that we saved the world.
Yes.
We saved the world.
Yep.
We're capable of that. We can all be heroes. Heck, we just saw an election where people who look like us saved the world. So it can happen in the future too.
You're very comfortable, as comfortable acting as you are in your activism. Some people are not. Some people are like, okay, today I'm just an actor. How do you find that balance and still keep those boundaries?
Yeah. Well, I don't know how to answer that question because I don't know how to do it any other way. I don't even know that there's a separation for me, right? Like, I use my art to further the causes that I'm an activist for. Makes sense. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I do other kinds of art. Like, I love to do a comedy, and I've done many a play that has no social commentary or influence, but the work that has presented the most satisfaction to me is the work that feels like I'm helping people empathize a bit more or learn something about a community that they are unfamiliar with, or imagine a world that we can create when we recognize the humanity and dignity of every person. So that's my art, but my activism is also about moving the needle in that way as well. So I've always said I live in revolutionary times. And when you are alive in a time like that, which I have been, it's, you know, the 90s were about staying alive, literally. We were fighting a pandemic then, we're fighting one now. You know, the 2000s were about making sure that we didn't lose the ability to marry forever with Defensive Marriage Acts. You know, my entire adult life has been about moving the needle towards more acceptance of LGBTQ people and people of color, and the communities that exist in those intersections. So I'll say this. The reason why I feel like they're seamless is because in both roles, I feel like I have to be as authentic and present and laid bare many times. Both works call for that. you have to, in order to move people to support a cause, you have to come to it in a personal way and be vulnerable enough to share that with someone. As an actor, I have to open myself up to feelings that are uncomfortable at times. They're, to me, they're one and the same. They're about the human experience and how we can do it better.
No, thank you. That's very powerful. And the concept of living on purpose is something I think everyone, even if they're not doing it or haven't been doing it, I think it's something that a lot of the quarantining and what we've been through this year have forced people to see a lot of those truths.
For sure.
Nothing like being stuck in-house with yourself.
Right. But also, if you in this moment are not aware of the inequities in our system, you're not paying attention, or you don't want to, you're closing your eyes to it. So it's pretty obvious the work that we have to do. And, you know, I think television shows like Star Trek Discovery help us process that. Especially, you know, what amazes me about this season of Star Trek is that we made it last year.
Yes.
We finished it in February before the pandemic even happened. And the parallels are insane. And I'm going to tell you, it continues next week, because I was just talking to Alex Kurtzman and he reminded me what episode 5 was. And I was like, oh my God. So it's really, that's just the universe, right?
I actually spoke to David Ajala about a month ago, and he said the same thing. He was like, it's eerie. He was talking about the pandemic. He was referencing the pandemic. He was referencing a lot. And he's like, it's very, very creepy sometimes when I think, and as I see the episodes come out, because he had seen, you know, previews, and he was like, oh my God, I forgot we talked about this. I forgot we did this.
I tell you, so when we made episode 4, it was last year, and I recorded my log on the stage. I was the first time I recorded it. And they just, you know, they made everybody shut up and they did a wild line and I recorded it. But then I had to come back and re-record it while we were in the shelter in order. And I think I recorded it again in May. And they didn't change a word.
Wow.
And I had to read it 3 times because I cried the first time I read it. And it was like, I was like, I cannot believe what I'm reading right now.
And that it's real. Yeah,
and
it was, real. Yeah. Something else David also said was that there's quite a bit of hijinks and practical jokes that happen on set. And
grown old people. We don't do that kind of thing.
He named Oyin, he named Anthony, he definitely named you, and he named Sonequa as being some of the practical jokers on set.
I'm not a big practical joker, but I'm a jokester. a wordsmith, if you will. But Sonequa, first of all, is a practical jokester, and she will scare you because she's little. You know, she's little and she's fat. So she can get you, and she will. But yeah, I mean, we're just like a bunch of like siblings. Like we're like teenagers who get to make believe for work. It's crazy that we get to do this. You know, we walk
That's
on those
amazing.
Sets and it's you're immersed in this world, and it's very easy to get lost in it with these amazing, beautiful people.
And they are. The set is amazing, and I love the fact that also a lot of the secondary characters are getting their moment this season. Before we get to questions, because there's a bunch of them in the chat, I wanted to ask Jan. No, they love you. Trust me. It is all love. No, it's full of love. What I wanted to ask you, I wanted you to tell us about a charity that you work with. We've been putting the link in the chat for those of you who haven't seen. Glisten. Tell us.
Glisten, GLSEN.org is the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Educators Network. And I'm on their board. I have been for a couple years now, but I've had a over 20 year relationship with them, along with GLAAD and the task force. But GLSEN, actually, their purpose is very simple. It's just to make every school in this country a safe space for LGBTQIA plus students. And that's all I want. I want them to feel safe so that they can learn and so that they can lead us to a better future. And I, at the moment, I'm doing cameos in order to raise money for GLSEN. So if you want to find me on Cameo, you can go there and I can make a video for you, and the proceeds will go directly to GLSEN, which is a pretty great gift these days because as the holidays are approaching.
And no, it is. And I think everybody.
I give great advice on it too.
See, so that's how you get through the rest of the pandemic. You basically go to Cameo, you pay to ask Wilson a question, he answers it, and the money goes to a good cause. I'm going to do it next week because I need the moisturizer and the toner, but I'll ask him through Cameo. I will wait. Some questions in the fabulous chat. As a writer myself, do you see a positive future of more gay relationships being portrayed in TV and film? This is someone asking.
Yes, I do, because we have more writers like you. The only way that that's going to happen, and it is happening, but the only way it's going to happen more is if we start seeing content that's actually created by LGBTQIA content creators. What a concept, right? But we are seeing more of that. You see, like, you know, Janet Mock, who has a deal, and his name just fell out of my hand. Dan. Schitt's Creek.
Okay, yes. I know you're talking about it now. I can't remember it either.
I can't either.
Look, 2020.
Anyway, but my point is that it's about content creators and empowering LGBTQIA content creators to tell their stories and tell our stories. And we need to be hiring them and reaching for them to write these stories. As a producer, I'm looking for them.
Oh, okay. So should they also go to Cameo to pitch you a script?
I like that idea, to be honest with you.
Do you ever get to say, listen, I know this is what you want me to say. Can I say it this way for two or three takes? Okay.
There's always, even in this pandemic scenario, there is always a writer, producer, someone, you know, one of the writers of the script on set. So this year, because they can't physically be there, they literally are on like an iPad, like on a tripod. And we're like, is it okay if I say, you know? But, you know, we do try to stay married to the script. And then in terms of the writer's room, we have interactions and dialogue with them. We have meetings before the season starts to talk about what the arc of the season is. If you want, like some actors don't want that. And the arc of your character and the story, some actors don't want that. But I'm one of those who's like, I need to know the beginning, middle, and end, at least.
Yes, you were like, give me the information.
I'm going to know how to build.
Yes, yes.
But there are amazing actors who don't work that way. Who don't. Like, Anthony doesn't want to know anything past, like, the episode he's working on right now.
Oh, interesting. So that it's more of a real reaction.
Yeah, that's the way he likes it. And I have to, you know, edit myself when I talk about it around him, because I'd be like, and then an episode. Oh, you don't know.
But you know what? Also, though, it works for your character, because your character sort of has an all-knowing air that's about
true.
Him.
Does he? And
well, here's the thing. I feel when I look at him that he has an all-knowing air, just like a doctor would, to make you feel comfortable.
Oh, okay.
But not that he actually knows all the things. It's that I got you, honey. Just sit down and just stop talking and let me get your temperature and stop. You know, like, that's what I get.
The bedside manner, it's an art form. He has a good one. He's good bedside manner.
Hang on. Yeah, I don't want that to happen. Several people have said this, but I will read this one question. You are an amazing inspiration in my life and work. Where does or what is your biggest motivation to produce such amazing content? How do you hold on to that during hard times like 2020? And this is not the only person in the chat who said stuff like this. You've got a lot of fans who were like, he is my inspiration. Give him all the things.
Well, first of all, thank you. I get as frustrated and lazy and uninspired as everybody else. And I'll tell you what I do is I reach out and search out for people I know who are going to drive me. I look for anything Oprah has to tell me. my work is really personal to me, and I feel like whatever it is that I'm creating, I know that I feel like it's a personal thing that I'm doing for you. I don't think of it as a big, as a performance that's going out to millions. I think of it as a conversation I'm having one-on-one. And I try to make it as personal as possible. And I feel like if I can feel like my art is being of service, that I feel aligned, that feeling of alignment to me is something I crave. And I look for any opportunity to help me get there. And that's when I feel most in line with my purpose.
That's amazing. And I think that's something that's all of us could strive for. I'm assuming you meditate. I'm assuming those moments that you take for yourself. I personally drink. whatever you need to get through right now.
I don't drink. But I'll tell you, I'm in Canada. And I love it here. But I start my day doing yoga, as most people who know me know. That is, you know, not only an opportunity to center myself and, you know, wake up to the world, but also to put my spine back together in the morning, because that is a necessary thing at 47 years old.
He's like, lying, everybody. He's actually 32. He's actually 32. This is a joke we do on the show. It's fine. I'm 86. He's 32. It's a thing.
Well, somebody tell my vertebrae.
somebody tell my knees. oh, okay. So the person, all right, I'm sorry. We didn't explain something. Somebody in the chat is like, I don't know what Cameo is. Okay, so Cameo is an app. And it allows, you can go on the app and request, like, say you want to send a happy birthday message to somebody. You can actually scroll down and find a star to who will say that for you. And you can send that message to somebody else or send it to yourself. So that is what the Cameo app is. We are suggesting that you can also ask for relationship advice or advice from Mr. Cruz. I don't know if everybody on that app is willing to do that.
I have sent happy birthday messages, you know, anniversary messages. I did help somebody propose. I've sung happy birthday a million times. I enjoy it every time, by the way. And and I've given some, you know, coming out advice or whatever. If I'm not qualified to give you advice, I will find a place for you.
Oh, and I'm sure, and he's serious about this. I'm going to just take a few more questions and then we're going to let you go, because we know you need your rest so that you can get up in the morning, do your yoga and straighten out your spine again. do you still have your grab them by the midterms pin?
I don't have it here, but I do have it. I saved it. I put it in storage before I left LA. I loved it so much.
I was going to say, you need to have it sent to you. And I actually, this is a question I have had, and I meant to ask you about this when we were talking about your character coming back. Because your character basically lost their body and their mind or their consciousness was sort of downloaded into a new body. So in a way, is Hugh trans?
In a way, he is.
Because that's not technically, like, it's an adjustment. And that's not, and I meant to ask you that.
You know what's interesting is I literally had this thought. And when you watch, and I can't say any more than this, but
okay.
When you watch season 4, you'll remember this conversation.
Okay. That's fantastic.
That's not saying too much. But yes, it occurred to me in the shooting of this scene this week that same thing, that yes, Hugh is trans.
When you look at how he had to literally transition into living again, it was like, that was something I actually had been meaning to ask you. Thank you.
No, it's just funny because it's interesting because it just came up. Anyway, go ahead.
How is shooting now in the pandemic? How is that?
It's going great. I mean, there are a lot of new parameters. Sometimes you feel like you're working in a hospital, and that works perfectly fine for me.
I was going to say, because kind of.
But we get tested 3 times a week. That's not a secret. I got tested this morning, as a matter of fact. Yesterday morning. Tomorrow I get... Wait, what's today? Wednesday. Today's Wednesday. Tuesday. I get tested tomorrow. I went to a Tuesday, meeting today.
But is it that hardcore test where they put the...
No. Very few of those are being done anymore.
But you're anyway, in Canada, so, you don't know.
Right.
But, we don't know. I mean, there are
there are less people on the stage floor, you know, so only the necessary people who have to be there are there on the actual set. A lot of the people who used to be on set who didn't need to be there, like Video Village, are further away from us, but we still have access to them. And aside from that, you can't really tell the difference.
It's
going great. But I mean, that said, it's only been a week and a half, so.
There's people in here saying such wonderful things. You touch everyone from every walk of life. I am so, incredibly inspired by you. I can't even keep up with all the lovely things that people are saying about you.
I love you. I love all of you. I really do.
And I honestly,
it's been 25 years and I honestly feel like I have been supported and uplifted and literally supported by a community of people who cheered me on and made a career that was literally impossible when it started last 25 years. So I am the luckiest man in this business.
Well,
I should
also
be a high school drama teacher by now. That's what I was going to do.
There's still hope. I mean, since you're only 32, you've got time.
That's right. My second career. Yeah.
But I will say this. It's not hard to cheer you on because you are so good and you are so genuine. So thank you. Because you're not one of those people that's like, oh my God, they're great. And then you see them off camera, you're like, okay. I've had several interviews like that where I've been like, wow, I really like the character they play.
And it's there's also another kind of person who's interesting, who's very rude, like in the green room. And then they get to the talk show couch. This is my experience. So I have been in green rooms.
I know what you mean. Yep.
With people, and they're evil, and or just having a terrible day or something. And then they walk their happy butt onto the couch of the talk show host. They're like, and I'm like, see, now that person I would hang out with. Where was she?
Yes. Heavily medicated. Listen, yeah, no, I've been in the green room of like conventions at the end of the day. Ooh.
Right.
Ooh. It's like, we can see you, we can hear you, yes. Right? You know. Yes. But no, you are
I guarantee you this is who you would see if you came and sat here with me. This is it.
But we wouldn't because we'd have to be 6 feet away. And
well, I'd be there.
But I really sincerely thank you for joining me and hanging out with me. I mean, especially since it's your first week of shooting. you could have, you know, postponed it, just said no, but I really, really appreciate it. We love everything you're doing on the show. We love the show. I personally want to thank you for also being so personal and open, even on social media, even when I've seen, you know, when people are asking questions, and you're always so gracious, and that means a lot. Thanking you for taking the time to talk to me and hanging out with all
Honestly,
of us.
I am a huge fan. I'm so grateful. Thank you for asking me and for making this happen. I love all the Blurreds, every single one of them. Continue to, fight the good fight, do your math and your science, save the world.
And also the Latinx geeks, all the Latinx geeks and the indigenous.
Yes. What do we call those?
Latinx geeks, we got them. We have indigenerds, the indigenous.
But there's no blurred-ish. There's not like a, I guess you can't do it. It just doesn't work. Blurred.
No, wait, but honestly, I've literally been approached with like, hi, I'm a Latinx geek, and I would like to talk to you about, and I've had indigenous people say, hey, I'm an indigenerd, and I love indigenerd.
I love indigenerd. Well, your audience should know that they have a home on Discovery. We make it for you, for show.
Wasn't amazing? I loved this interview. I love it when people I'm interviewing are uplifting. So if you want some more uplifting moments, I'm going to ask you to come hang out with me this weekend at New York Comic Con. Again, the Star Trek Discovery panel is going to be at the Javits Center, of course, on the Empire stage, Saturday, October 9th, from 12:45 p.m. Eastern to 1:45 p.m. Eastern. And if you cannot make the show, it will be live streamed, I believe, at the same time. And you can go to findthemetaverse.com to learn more about that. Also, please check out Realm FM's new scripted podcast, If I Go Missing, The Witches Did It, starring Oscar-nominated actress Gabourey Sidibe. All the information for both New York Comic Con as well as the podcast will be in the show notes. And I really thank you for listening. Please tell your friends about the show. Give me a like and some stars over on iTunes. I really, really appreciate it. And listen, if you really want to support the show, please consider becoming a Patreon subscriber. You can support over at patreon.com/theblurredgirl. That's THEBLERDGURL. Thank you so much, and I will see you next time.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.